New year, new KSL movie show. Now you can listen when you're running errands at lunch. This is Andy Farnsworth, and I'm joined by Steve Sales for all the week's biggest movies and shows, 11 to 1 on KSL News Radio.
It's finally Friday, and this is Dave and Dijanovic. Conversation and insights on the stories Utahns care about most. It's Friday on KSL News Radio.
And the sun is up, and the Dow is down. Way down. You just heard our news team reporting that it's down more than 300 points this morning. We're keeping a close eye on that. And Dave, you just told me it's still the fallout from the scary inflation numbers.
We just can't get rid of the inflation. It just keeps hanging on. It is so sticky. Remember, just a couple weeks ago, we were almost at 40,000. Right now, it's down to 38. 38 is still good, but it's not 40. It's 9:07. It's time for the launch.
Sequence engaged.
And here are three things that Debbie wants you to know.
Countdown. Three.
Well, we know President Biden has spent much of his presidency trying to address the issue of climate change, moving away from fossil fuels, stopping pipelines and drilling, and promoting EVs. In fact, my co-host bought an EV. He was so convinced by President Biden's pitch, he ran out and he bought himself an EV. There's a new Wall Street Journal poll that says just 3% of voters call climate change their top issue. Obviously, Dave, you're in the 3%.
I tell you, Deb, I guess
you
I am.
You walked right into that one.
What I say, that I'm the reluctant tree hugger.
He's leaning into Biden's EV policies.
Thanks, President. I appreciate it. I love my EV. Save the Earth. No, I think the reason it's not the top issue anymore is because financially, we are struggling so much because of inflation. We were just talking about that. The cost of living, the cost of housing. When those things are forefront, climate change for me, it doesn't even register, and it doesn't seem like I'm alone.
Countdown two.
The movement to keep kids safe from too much sodium. You didn't know there was such a movement, but there is. Has its sights set on Lunchables. That's right, Lunchables. Ban them from schools, they say. At least from being served at school lunch. Doesn't mean you can't send your kid to school with one. But, you know, every parent, Dave, you're familiar with the Lunchable, right? The quad little plastic tray stuffed with those circular pieces of processed turkey, a little bit of cheese, a couple crackers, and some cookies. Well, now Consumer Reports, that's right, the watchdog group petitioning the government to get rid of them from the school lunch line.
That's nearly 30 million children that may be served lunch kits that have these contaminants and very high sodium levels. We think our kids deserve better choices, and these Lunchable kits should be removed from the school lunch program.
There are healthy choices. There absolutely are healthy choices. It's not like Lunchables are the only thing that's available for kids, but my wife has worked in these cafeterias, and she has seen kids take entire trays full of healthy food and dump them in the garbage. It doesn't matter how healthy the food is that you serve if the kids won't stick it in their mouth.
Launch countdown one.
A new school safety law kicking in across Utah requiring panic buttons be added to Utah classrooms in case something goes wrong in the school and the teacher needs to call for help. At least one armed guard per school. And then there's this. I didn't realize this new law requires the bullet ballistics glass film on the first level of schools. So it's the Granite School District says this costs about $25 a square foot. Here's what the Granite District told KSL 5 Television's Daniel Woodruff about this.
This Granite School District has 87 buildings, so all of those first floor windows must be covered in ballistics glass film that starts about $25 a square foot.
Starts at $25 a square foot. First of all, I didn't know bullet ballistics glass film was even a thing. How does this work? But it does sound that it is extremely expensive.
Dave and Dijanovic.
The launch.
Commence.
Dave and Dijanovic.
Dave and Dijanovic.
Special coverage of the top local story.
Let's talk about this new law that was signed by Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson this week. It's now a law. It is pricey, but parents who lost two children in a mass shooting in Florida came to Utah for this moment to see this signing happen. And it's really hard to say that, they're not right. I mean, because they're living the horror.
What Utah's done proactively, it means everything to protecting schools.
One thing that I've realized, and we've done so many of these heartbreaking stories about school shootings, I can't say I remember one time where the school shooter is attacking from the outside in. They usually break into the school and start attacking. Hmm. So the idea of protecting, putting bulletproof film on the outside part of the glass is not something that we have seen.
Okay, let's talk about what this law is. It's huge. It's now signed. School districts are going to have to start complying. But let's boil it down to the three aspects of it that stood out most, I think, to both of us. Armed guards in each school. We've talked a lot about this. It can be a police officer, it can be a security guard, or it might be a school employee who signs up to be a guardian who is armed. So that is going to be something your kids are going to start seeing in schools. If they don't have a police officer in their school right now, they may see a police officer. They may see a security guard. So that's part of this legislation, Dave.
I'm trying to remember, when it comes to the guardians, which is the school employee that may be able to do some training, carry a gun, are they identified? Does everyone know who that employee
is? That's a great question. We're going to have to ask the bill sponsor when we get a chance to talk to them. If they have to wear some sort of like a uniform or a badge to identify them. There's also this aspect of the legislation where there's a silent panic button that has to be installed in each classroom for teachers. KSL 5 Television's Daniel Woodruff joined KSL legal analyst Greg Skordis on KSL at Night last night, and I was listening to them. This was just an absolutely fascinating conversation, and Daniel really brought all of the information about the panic button. And in a moment, we'll talk about that ballistic, film on windows too.
It requires that teachers have access to panic buttons, that if there was an emergency like an active shooting or even something like a medical emergency in the classroom, that they could press it and it would go directly to law enforcement, who could then respond much faster, so they could just in the moment push the button as opposed to having to make a call and describe what's going on in the classroom.
Almost like a push button 911.
That's interesting. I haven't heard of that because I don't feel like 911 is overly difficult to use, but this is basically the big red button. You push it and it goes directly and alerts.
Yeah.
And
law
maybe,
enforcement. Yeah. It goes right to the source, so there can be a full-on response when the panic button is
pushed.
It's
the bat phone.
Straight ahead, let's talk about this film, this ballistic film that is going to be required to go over school windows. And how much is this totally going to cost Utah taxpayers? We'll get into that as well.
This Granite School District has 87 buildings, so all of those first floor windows must be covered in ballistics glass film that starts about $25 a square foot.
David Dujanovic.
Special coverage of the top local story.
There's no arguing that the life of a child is priceless. Turns out protecting them from evil, should evil walk into the school, it is pricey. Dave and I talking about a new school safety law for Utah, signed into law this week. Requires each school have a guard, whether that's a police officer, a security guard, or a guardian. It's a school employee who is, packing a gun. Then they've got the aspect of the silent panic buttons in the classroom. So teachers can just push a button and it goes, like you said, the bat phone that goes right to the police department. And this is the one aspect of the law that I didn't realize until I was listening to KSL 5 Television's Daniel Woodruff talk to Greg Skordis on KSL at Night last night. $25 a square foot ballistic film on first story windows. And Daniel talked to Ben Horsley with the Granite School District, and here's what he told him.
This Granite School District has 87 buildings, so all of those first floor windows must be covered in ballistics glass film that starts about $25 a square foot.
So, Debbie, I was just looking. We're on the first floor. We have windows that are facing outside, and they are actually bulletproof glass that we have here at KSL. But I was just doing some quick calculations. We have about 80 square feet of windows just in this small little room. This room's maybe 15, 20 feet wide. It would cost almost $2,000 to put this film just on our small little section in the studio. Now, we have hundreds of feet of windows just here at our place of business. This is exactly what the schools are dealing with. They have thousands of square feet, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of square feet
of windows.
Of windows mm-hmm. on just the first mm-hmm. floor.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to cost millions.
Yeah. What's the cost of a price? You know, child is priceless. So I understand that we want to protect our kids. I'm just having a hard time getting my head wrapped around how we're going to afford $25 per square foot. I hope they get a bulk deal on this. So Greg and Daniel on KSL at Night last night really dove into the concern about the money aspect of it as well. And the school districts have some concerns about this. So I looked at the fiscal note on this legislation that was signed this year, passed this year by Utah lawmakers. It looks to me to be around for this coming school year and the next, about $10 million from the state. Now, we're hoping to speak to the lawmaker, Ryan Wilcox. He was a driver behind this legislation. He was all in on this. He did a great job getting this through the legislature. But I need to confirm with him that number, because I'm looking at this list of numbers here, and it looks to me to be $10 million from state coffers. School districts are saying that's not enough.
No.
That's not going to be nearly enough. Here's Greg and Daniel last night talking about the money aspect of this on KSL at Night.
And he particularly was critical of the legislature, which did provide money. And you can go look on the bill at a number of categories that help fund this. But basically, Granite School District said, in a nutshell, the legislature did not provide enough money by a long shot. And unless they pony up more money, the Granite School District, as an example, may have to go look at raising taxes to pay for all of the requirements in the bill. You talk about armed guards.
Right.
He said that's millions of dollars alone on an ongoing basis, not satisfied
not
with one-time money,
right.
Because you've got to hire people to do that.
That's a great point. So this bulletproof glass film that they would put on, that is a one-time cost. Once that is installed, it stays there. So as opposed to guards or guardians, whatever it might be, which every single year you've got to account for, this would be a one-time cost or a one-time investment.
Yeah. The legislature even acknowledged on the fiscal note, Dave, that they say in the aggregate, this could cost local education agencies, which are our districts, $20 million in 2025. A couple more million ongoing. So it's basically that's coming from taxpayers. And I think we really have to think, you know, what is safety worth? You know, and our kids are our most precious resource. And we know from the agony that so many parents across this country have gone through that we never want it to be our child. And we always want to be able to say we took every single step we possibly could to keep our kids safe, whether that's training them. Sadly, we have to train them how to react if there's an active shooter situation in the school. But I'm looking at our school buildings, and we all have to recognize this. I think this is a no-brainer. As we're driving by these school buildings, they were never, so many of them were never designed with active shooter in mind. They were designed to win architectural awards. They were designed with an open concept. My goodness, they were designed with full-on floor-to-ceiling windows where you could walk down the inner parts of the hall of the school and look in classrooms on both sides. And these aren't classrooms with 20 kids. These are full-on computer labs with dozens of kids. They were designed with very, very small closets where we now require kids to hide in. So you've got 30 kids piling in a band closet, which already has band equipment stored. And they're expecting the kids to just hunker down. You know, so we are not designing schools right now. And that is a huge, huge problem for these schools. Now we're asking them to retroactively go back in and fit the schools with panic buttons and ballistic film. And I mean, school guards are easier. Because you can bring them in from anywhere. It doesn't mean they're cheap. That's just my view. And how unfortunate is it that we knew about school shootings since Columbine? And yet we continue to cookie cutter these schools all across Utah with these horrible designs for kids' safety.
But again, I don't want to look at it. There's a couple things. You cannot make it bulletproof. You cannot afford, or it's not practical to protect from all the possible scenarios that could happen. There's no way. You say a child's life is priceless. I get it. But there is a practicality here. We cannot account for every single scenario. We can't protect from outside shooters, inside shooters, bombs, cars. There's only so much you can do. So I'm sympathetic to the school districts that are looking at this and say, okay, well, how many more things are you going to require from us? Because all this money that is going into safety is taking away from other parts of education. And is it such a threat? Is it happening so often that it makes sense to divert all of those funds from teaching, educating, resources, additional help, tutoring, because that's where the money's coming from. It's at the sacrifice of all those other programs. So we need to find a balance and strike a balance and say, we have to accept the fact that we cannot turn these into bulletproof, completely safe campuses. It's impossible. It can't be done. So let's make smart moves forward where it makes sense. And then we're going to have to say at some point, we can't just focus exclusively and spend all of our money on safety.
Yeah, it is expensive. And I'm looking forward to continuing this conversation as we learn more about the ultimate cost and how schools are going to be tackling it, what their deadlines are to get these security protocols in place. It sounds like a heavy lift. I hope they have more than 4 months or 5 months to get these protocols in place and get these schools wired for panic buttons and ballistic film and all those other requirements. Straight ahead, Dave brought this story to my attention this morning. There is a teenager accused at a local high school of breaking into his father's safe, allegedly, and taking a gun to school. Now, I want to make it clear before we go to break that no shots were fired from the gun. But Dave wondered, what does Utah law say about parents' liability in cases like this?
Dave and Dejanovic, your morning companions for talk, analysis, and key perspectives on Utah's biggest stories on KSL News Radio.
I think this this next topic is too heavy for the littles. The little ones. So, little Earth warning, if you want to listen to this later, mom and dad, you can certainly podcast us on your favorite podcast platform. So, give you a second here to turn down the radio because we're going to talk about guns in schools. I don't want to scare kids. So, for the second time in 2 days, we found out here at KSL about a couple of teenagers who are accused of breaking into their parents' gun safe and taking guns to school.
Yeah, two different school districts, nowhere near each other. But yeah, in the last 2 days, two specific instances where it's being reported that kids grabbed a gun, from their parents' safe, broke into it, cracked it, whatever it was, and then they took it to school.
So let's start with KSL 5 Television's Lindsay Ertz. She talked to a school resource officer in Lehigh who said that one student had planned his own suicide at school. Thankfully, a student alerted the vice principal, and they intervened with the student and got the student some help. We also found out about how the student got a hold of the gun, allegedly.
The boy got the weapon by stealing the key to his family's safe.
They only had a key to it, so it wasn't like a keypad. It wasn't necessarily the secure safe, in my opinion.
And then yesterday, KSL reported that a 15-year-old at Roy High School brought a loaded gun to school, and they found it in his waistband, according to reports. The student said he retrieved the weapon from his father's locker without his parents' knowledge.
Yeah, and the police department, Roy City, put out a press release and made it clear the juvenile was taken into custody. No shots were fired, and that he had brought it for his own protection. So clearly there was something going on there where he was scared, but, you know, certainly doesn't make it right under the eyes of the law. But you wanted to know, you had a very important question about this that you wanted to ask KSL legal analyst Greg Skorda. So let's bring Greg on. Hi, Greg.
Good morning.
Greg, I couldn't help but have my mind, and perhaps this is part of the recency bias, of thinking about, okay, here's young kids, you know, teens, middle teens, and they basically break into their parents' gun safe, and they take it, bring it to school. Are the parents held liable in any way, or could they be held liable? And again, the reason my mind goes there is because just this week, the parents of Ethan Crumbly were sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison when their son, the 15-year-old Ethan, murdered four of his classmates, wounded seven more. But the parents, and I want to play a little bit from the victim's impact statement from this case as the Crumblies were being sentenced, and listen to how the victim's parents, those that had died, how they viewed the parents' responsibility.
Not only did your son kill my daughter, but you both did as well. You failed as parents. The punishment that you face will never be enough. It will never bring her back. It will never be a loss that you have suffered, and it will never heal the pain. Your Honor, I request that the maximum sentence be enforced, as it will never come close to the life sentence I was given.
Greg, can you give us an idea of what happens? What kind of responsibility do parents have if their child takes the gun and uses it?
Yeah, and that was tragic to listen to that. You know, that Ethan Crumbly case was really, as far as we know, one of the first in the nation where a parent has been held criminally responsible for the conduct of a child in these mass shootings. And what we have to look at is the law, and every state has different laws. And in that particular state, I think it was Michigan.
It was.
The parents were convicted of involuntary manslaughter. We don't have that exact statute in Utah, but we have manslaughter. And what we say is this: murder is obviously held a step aside for the people that are the most serious, the most culpable, those that intend to kill. But even if you didn't intend, if your conduct was reckless, for example, you left a gun out, you knew your child had a gun, and that person kills, you can still be criminally responsible. And that's exactly what happened there. And you can bet, Dave and Debbie, that other states are going to follow that lead. And the next time a kid goes to a school and hurts somebody, they're going to start looking at the culpability of the parents, what steps they took to prevent it from occurring, what steps they took to make sure that their guns were secure and locked and unavailable to their children, and not just saying, well, stuff happens and my kid got my gun and, you know, that's really tragic, but I'm not at fault. That's not going to fly anymore.
Is it legally required here in Utah to lock up your weapon?
It is not, and in part because we want people to be able to defend themselves and have access to a weapon. Now, having said that, it is important that people have, and not legally required, that people have safes, that they have gun locks, that they have the various things that can prevent these things from occurring, especially if you have children in the house. Because really, mass shootings aside, which are horrible, most of the people that are killed by guns, especially children, are just those that are in the house and playing with a gun or finding dad's or mom's gun or something like that. And so you would think parents would be ultra careful to make sure that the kid can't get the gun, just to protect the kid, him or herself.
Well, Greg, and I want to point out that it appears in both of the situations that we've had happen locally this week where kids have been found, according to police, to have guns at schools, two different circumstances here in Utah, that from what we know, the facts that we have thus far, in both cases, the police have said that the guns were locked up and that the parents, you know, the kids have said that they got either the keys or the safe information, you know, somehow and opened the safe. So in my initial reading of both of these cases, it looks like the parents have taken the steps to lock up their guns.
Yeah, but you have to look, Debbie, at what's reasonable. And so, you know, I have a gun safe at my house, too, but my wife can't access it because she doesn't know where the combination is.
Yeah, we had the same situation in our home, Greg. I didn't know the code.
Of course.
I don't know how I would.
Right. So you have to say, well, okay, I've got a child in the house. I've got a gun safe. What's reasonable? You know, to leave the keys out? The one case, I heard the officer, you guys played the tape, it was just a gun safe with a key, and the kid found the key.
I see what you're saying.
I don't know that that's going to protect the parent.
Okay.
I just don't know that that's enough.
Okay. I suppose it depends on the circumstance. Every case is different.
Yep.
Greg Skordas,
absolutely
incredible job this week here at KSL News Radio and all of your coverage of the Daybell trial, your hosting of KSL at Night last night, and then joining us first thing this morning.
I think what's going to be very difficult is, as Greg was describing this, how can somebody be responsible when they're not breaking any law? There's no law here in Utah that says you have to lock up your weapon. And negligence, quite honestly, is almost in the eye of the beholder here. So this Crumbly case, I think, opens up a lot of questions that we're going to have to address here in the state.
Next, this is a story we tried to get to yesterday, but we had so much breaking news all morning long that we had to put it off to today. Authorities offering a reward, $10,000 reward, after a bald eagle was found shot through its wing in southern Utah. It had to be euthanized. Division of Wildlife Resources joining us live next on what's legal and not legal. And I can tell you, this ain't legal. All right? Huge fines attached to stuff like this if you're caught. That's why they're offering a big $10,000 reward for information leading to a conviction.
Dave and Dejanovic.
Turns out if you shoot a bald eagle and probably other birds, and they don't know who did it, they're going to put a $10,000 tag on you for tips leading to your arrest and conviction. That's law enforcement. The other avenue is in court, you could be slapped with a $100,000 fine and spend a good chunk of time in prison.
It is incredible the things you can't do to a bald eagle. Like, obviously, you can't kill a bald eagle. You can't chase it, can't shoot it, poison it, wound it, kill it, capture it, trap it, collect it. And it even says molest it or disturb it.
So torture it.
Or even play around with
all
it.
All those things you listed are like torturing a bird.
Yeah. I mean, it's an incredibly comprehensive list.
Well, they're protected, right? The Bald and Golden Eagles Protection Act enacted almost 85 years ago. So, you know, ignorance of an 85-year-old law is no excuse. This is, you know, so basically right now we've got this $10,000 reward, in this case of whodunit to a bald eagle that had to be euthanized after it was shot in the wing. This is all kinds of horrible. It sounds like it happened in the Iron County area, Captain.
That's correct. It did, yes.
Thanks for joining us. Sorry we had to put your interview on hold. Yesterday was a wild day here at Broadcast House. Captain Chad Bettridge, law enforcement officer with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources. When did this happen, and how was this poor eagle discovered?
So it happened just about a week ago, and there was an individual who was kind of driving down a road just northwest of Cedar City and noticed this bird just off the road out in the West Desert. And the bird was alive at that time. The individual went over, thought that the bird had been electrocuted, because that does happen. The eagles land on power lines, and they're so big that they're able to stretch out their wings and, you know, hit lines and get electrocuted. So that was what his assumption was. He picked it up and took it to a rehabber in Cedar, and the rehabber said it had not been electrocuted, and they contacted the Division of Wildlife law enforcement, and that's how we got involved.
So what had happened to it?
So initially, the rehabber looked at it, and they were worried that it had been shot by a shotgun. So, and at that time, the bird was beyond saving, so they did have to euthanize the bird. And so the rehabber euthanized the bird, and then the law enforcement officer showed up, and they x-rayed the bird and didn't see any shrapnel or any type of shotgun pellet or anything like that. So the officer took the bird and processed the carcass and did find a bullet hole in the wing. And it was, we're not 100% sure what type of rifle it was used, but it appeared to be a bit of a larger calibered rifle that was used to shoot at this bird.
So it feels very, very intentional then.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know of at least based on the circumstances that we have right now, it feels that it was done on purpose. I don't know how you could accidentally shoot an eagle with a large powered rifle, but I guess there's a possibility of that happen. But for the most part right now, that's kind of how we're looking at it.
Yeah. Well, especially if it's just in the wing, that makes me think that it was probably flying, because, you know, if it's on the ground or on a perch, then you can't just hit the wing. The wings are tucked right next to the body.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that sometimes birds of prey engorge themselves with food, and they sit on the ground and to digest it and maybe stretch their wings out or something like that. So it's possible, but that's the circumstances are such that we don't have an incredible amount of information on what actually happened, which is why we're seeking the public to see if anybody else might know.
Yeah. Well, $10,000 reward has been announced for information that leads to a conviction. Do you have any leads? And if you catch the person, how much, you know, can we throw the book at them?
So within the Division of Wildlife, we have a parameter. I mean, we have rewards available, but that $10,000 is announced outside of the Division of Wildlife, which is great.
Yeah,
which is
totally
great. It's just
another organization stepped up because they love bald eagles. Okay, that's awesome.
For sure. And if we can, you know, find who did this and we send them to court and they're convicted, they could be convicted of a felony. It would, you know, cost them lots of court fines, lots of, you know, restitution on the eagle itself, things like that. So it is a serious crime. It's as serious as you get in the Division of Wildlife as far as taking something intentionally. We're looking into it as hard as we can. Leads right now, I think I spoke to the officer a few days ago. He said he's talked to a couple people, but we're still looking for more information.
Captain Chad Bettridge, thank you for joining us from law enforcement with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources.
Does that satisfy the questions that you had about fines and why they do this?
Yeah, I think I have some larger questions of why such a harsh punishment. I get that is the law because of the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act. I wonder if it's not too harsh for shooting a bird. A $100,000 fine, a year in prison. It feels excessive.
Straight ahead, let's talk about Lunchables. There's a report out that now Consumer Reports wants those quad tray, film-covered circles of meat, square cheese, and cookies and crackers banned from school lunch lines. They don't want schools to serve them anymore. You're going to find out why. Next, see if you agree.
Movie show is a Friday tradition, and it still is. Make sure you're listening for the new KSL movie show after Dave and Dujanovic. We have our favorite movies and a few stinkers. 11 this morning on KSL News Radio.
It's finally Friday, and this is Dave and Dujanovic. Conversation and insights on the stories Utahns care about most. Friday on KSL News Radio.
Excited to talk about
so
this.
So antsy.
I am stepping all over the big voice, guys. Sorry there. Should Lunchables be banned from school lunch? You know, I saw this week that Consumer Reports says the, you know, some schools serve these. Those are the 4x4 plastic box, film covered quad containers with those round processed meats and square cheeses and cookies and crackers in them. And Consumer Reports tested them, Dave, and says what they found is enough for them to call on the federal government to keep them out of our kids' lunch lines at school.
Okay, so many things going on here. Number one, I love Lunchables.
You do?
I do. I'm way too old to be eating Lunchables, but I can pound a Lunchable, no question. It is also funny to me that they found that they were unhealthy, or that, you know, here's a big surprise, but Oscar Mayer actually changed the recipe to make them more healthy so that they would qualify to be served at school lunch. Oh,
I've never associated healthy with Lunchable. I just associate it with mom's in a hurry. Mom's going to get Bad Mom of the Year award. She doesn't care right now. Calories in. Eat your Lunchable. And usually my kids would devour them when I did, you know, when I put them in front of them. So, but Consumer Reports is like, hold on a minute. We are going to go out, buy Lunchables, and then we're going to take them to a lab. We are going to put them through the ringer to see exactly how unhealthy they are. And I will admit, there's some things that came out in this Consumer Reports lab analysis of Lunchables. Okay, as a mom, it would concern me. But it's too late for my kids, because I'm like, what am I going to do about it now? Because I'm pretty sure in their 20s, unlike Dave, they're over the Lunchable face. They've already ingested all of this stuff. But let's listen. Consumer Reports put a really succinct video and audio report together about what they found. Let's listen to it, and then we'll debate it.
Consumer Reports tested 12 store-bought Lunchables and similar lunch kits, and we found relatively high doses of lead, cadmium, or both in all of them. And most also had phthalates, which is a chemical used to make plastic that have been linked to a host of health problems. Two Lunchables manufactured by Kraft Heinz, similar to the ones we tested, are eligible to be served to children through the National School Lunch Program. That's nearly 30 million children that may be served lunch kits that have these contaminants and very high sodium levels. We think our kids deserve better choices, and these Lunchable kits should be removed from the school lunch program. Toxic heavy metals like lead and cadmium put kids at risk for developmental issues. While the amount of lead and cadmium in the Lunchables did not exceed the legal limit, the risk of these problems increases with regular consumption over time. We even compare the two Lunchable kits that are in the National School Lunch Program to a McDonald's Happy Meal that's consisted of chicken nuggets, french fries, and apple slices. And the Lunchables served in schools contain more sodium than the Happy Meal. Eating too much sodium can lead to high blood pressure. Lastly, all but one of the store-bought kits tested positive for phthalates, which are chemicals found in plastic. These known hormone disruptors can contribute to an increased risk of reproductive problems, diabetes, and certain cancers. While some manufacturers told CR that sodium enhances taste and convenience, others like Kraft Heinz and Maple Leaf Foods are actively working to reduce sodium levels in their products.
Wow. Right? I mean, I don't know what Lunchables did to wrong this guy, but he just went after Lunchables in the worst, hardest way. How terrible of a parent do you feel right now?
So what's your reaction to all of that?
Well, first of all, I get it. I understand Lunchables are not healthy. Like, that is not health food. I totally get it. I did my own little research, though. He compared it to the Happy Meal. I compared it to the McDonald's two cheeseburger and fries meal.
That your son eats?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah. Okay, so it's and more if you realistic think, for you.
Yeah, it's more realistic. You want to talk about sodium? The Lunchable has 700 milligrams of sodium, which is about 30% of your daily allowance. Like that one Lunchable, that's 30%. If my kid gets the two cheeseburger and fry meal, it's 75% of their daily allowance in sodium. It's more than 1,000 milligrams more. My point is, there's lots of unhealthy stuff out there that we shove in our kids' faces. Why are we picking on the Lunchable? Like, that's the place where we're drawing the line. Like, heaven forbid we give a kid something they will actually eat in school.
Well, I didn't like the whatever's leaching from the plastic. I was like, how? I appreciate, you know, watchdog groups. I do appreciate them going out and making sure there's not something really, 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 really super horrible going on. But that whole story we just listened to gave me bad mom syndrome, you know, because I'm thinking, oh, I didn't need my kid's school to serve him Lunchables. I did plenty of that. I mean, who doesn't do that kind of stuff in a pinch? I don't like the whatever's going on with the cadmium and all the others, like lead. Lead's always kind of been a scary thing for kids, in my view. That's why we, you know, when we moved into a house in the 70s or built in the 70s, these are what, like, real estate disclosures are all about, right? There's the disclose if there's known lead, because we know that lead can harm a child's brain development. So now they also say it's not at a level that is past the standard. So that didn't make
That's
me feel a lot better. But how am I going to know any of this? You know, how am I going to know any of this when I walk down the grocery store, I buy my kid a Lunchable? And what Consumers Report is asking is that the USDA pull these Lunchables from the school lunch line. Well, I got news for you. They're getting them at home. And also, I can pack a Lunchable with my, you know, and I did many, many times. I mean, it's not being lazy. It's just like you're just trying to fumble through parenting. So you grab a Lunchable off the grocery store shelf. But there's so much stuff that kids won't eat at school. My feeling about this is if kids are eating Lunchables, I'm so glad they're getting some calories in. Now, it's not a lot. It's like 350 calories, which surprised me. But you pointed out earlier, so much stuff that's served at the lunch line at schools ends up in the trash can. If they're eating the Lunchables, well, then they're eating. That's good.
My wife has worked in an elementary school for years, has spent a lot of time in the lunchroom. She said you would see kids with an entire full plate of food, healthy food. Thank you, Michelle Obama. That was one of her big things, is getting healthy food in schools. They would take the entire tray and dump it so they can get to recess.
Mm-hmm.
Kids don't love healthy food. That's a big shocker, parents. I don't know if I'm breaking news here or anything, but they do not like healthy food. And if mom and dad aren't over their shoulder looking at them, you can't trust them to eat all of the healthy options that are out there. This individual at Consumer Reports says our kids need to have better choices. They absolutely do have better choices, and they choose the unhealthiest option available because that's what they want to eat. And I think it's a major, major problem to go in there and just start removing all of these calories. They may be empty calories, but they are calories nonetheless. They burn, they give energy, they help kids' brains work, whatever the calories are. And I think if you're removing those, you're doing these kids a disservice, and you're just starving kids.
Let's ask our listeners to call in. We know we got lots of parents who listen. We know lots of parents have opinions about school lunch. So do you want Lunchables banned from school lunch? 801-575-TALK. 801-575-TALK. Let's pick on Lunchables next.
Dave and Dujanovic.
Consumer Reports is asking the federal government to ban Lunchables from the school lunch line. The federal government does allow, and schools do serve, Lunchables. We're all familiar with them. If you're a parent, you know what a Lunchable is. I think they were invented just for my kiddos. So I served them when my kids were growing up because they were easy breezy. And they were pretty inexpensive. Sometimes you could get them for $1.25. Lot probably costs a lot more now.
No, they still cost $1.25 if you get them on a deal.
So should we be banning them from the school lunch line?
Absolutely not, first of all. And they do serve Lunchables here in Utah. Mm-hmm. In fact, they had to manipulate and change the ingredients a little bit. That's what Kraft Heinz did, is they had to make it a little bit more healthy to reach the standards where they could be served in Utah schools. And they are being served in Utah schools. But absolutely, we should let kids eat Lunchables if they want.
But Consumer Reports says there's some stuff found in them when they did the testing, including high levels of sodium that concerned them. And we know sodium can be bad for us, right? I mean, the government is, our doctors have warned us for years, you know, stop eating so much sodium. It's linked to some health problems like increased blood pressure, maybe create some problems with your heart as well. Not saying that happens when you're
12,
a little one, but, you know, I think good eating habits are something that is good to start early on. But I'll tell you, Lunchables, pizza, hamburgers, I fed it all to my kids. I tried to make dinner every single night, even though I was working full time. We had dinner every single night, and we usually packed a school lunch every single day. And yes, I made them breakfast every single morning. But sometimes you gotta go this lazy route. Am I wrong? I think I'm right. 801-575-TALK. Should Lunchables be banned from school lunch?
I think I've seen, and my wife has worked in the school cafeteria several years. And she saw kids take perfectly healthy, well-balanced meals and throw them directly in the garbage without taking a single bite. Debbie, not taking a single bite. So we're putting a lot of pressure on our schools to feed our kids healthy stuff, and the kids still have the freedom to reject and throw it away. All I care about is if a kid has some calories in them. I hardly care how they get it, whether it's a candy bar, an ice cream sandwich, or a Lunchable. Kids need to have some calories because they are just going nonstop. Okay. And if they're not eating the healthy food, then they will eat no food.
You're going to pass out when I tell you what my school lunch was all through high school. Hi, Carrie. You're calling from Provo. Good morning. What do you think? Should Lunchables be banned from school lunches?
Hi, yes. Well, I work at a high school in Provo, and I am responsible for our school food pantry, which I started this year.
Oh, congrats.
Because many students were coming in to the counseling office because they were hungry.
Oh.
And we had fruit snacks and granola bars to offer them. And I'm a big nutrition nut. I wanted them to get protein. Protein will last longer. And I used the opportunity to help train them when they need a snack. So now my food pantry has single-serve peanut butter, peanuts, hummus, snacks similar to Lunchables where you peel it open and there's nuts, cubes of cheese, and some salami. I would love for whoever did this study to follow a high school student around and pick up all their wrappers and see what sodium they're intaking, because I cannot get a single student to take any of that. They all still want fruit snacks and granola bars.
Oh, my goodness. What a fantastic
awesome,
description.
Carrie.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, because that is what happens. Even when you have these great options, kids will go for the junk food or they won't eat at all. And we've seen it over and over and over again. And I think the downside is when kids are hungry, they can't focus, they can't concentrate, they're disruptive.
Can we look up and see how much protein Lunchables have? Because even though that meat is processed, and it is obviously, you know, it looks to me like they use a cookie cutter to cut out that little round circle, but it has cheese and meat, and so there's probably some protein in that. Janelle from Morgan, what do you think about the idea of kicking Lunchables to the curb?
I definitely think they should be kicked to the curb in schools. I think the schools have more responsibility to provide healthy options, and I don't think that the kids will starve if they don't get Lunchables. So I definitely think that we're the adults and have the responsibility of providing healthier options. And truthfully, the kids are going to choose what they're used to eating. So it definitely needs to start in the home with choosing more healthy options. But we really have to, I mean, look at the health epidemic of all these health problems in our society. And, you know, this, I think the schools have to take responsibility. We can't just offer junk because that's what kids like.
Janelle, thank you so much. Agree. We do need to make sure we're doing the best we can in the home. But I always look at it, too. It's like sometimes at school, that might be the only meal a child is getting because of their circumstances at home. I know schools are doing a great job sending home brown bag lunches and dinners with students, and that's awesome. But I think it's difficult because we know that kids learn when their bellies and their brains are full of nutrients. And if sometimes that nutrient is a Lunchable, I would rather have them have that than throw a salad away.
You asked about the protein. 11 grams of protein in a Lunchable.
Well, it's not.
It's not great.
It's not off the charts.
It's not
off the charts.
Yeah, it's not nothing.
They probably need to put another, you know, 7 more layers of processed turkey in there, and then maybe they can double that. Trish from Kaysville, what do you think?
Hi. I definitely agree with both of you. I don't think it's a good idea to ban Lunchables. I don't think it's a really good idea to ban much of anything just because it just adds more problems most of the time. But I also think that, like your last caller said, it does begin at home. If we are focused on helping our kids get the nutrition they need at home, I think we can be less concerned about what they are having for lunch outside of the home. Because if, you know, it's kind of a basic principle here, you know, do it if you can. And we really can't stress out too much about the stuff that we don't have control over.
Thank you, Trish. You would absolutely fall over if you knew that every single day at high school, my go-to was a Twix bar. Yeah, they'd invented Twix by then. a small fry and a Dr. Pepper every single day. We did not have open campus. We were not allowed to leave. I know it's horrible, right?
No, you're not alone, Deb. No judgment.
I do want to add this, Dave, and I want to. Oh, I wish we had more time to talk about this. But here's where I changed my view before I had kids. I want to go back to the early 1990s, and I was a reporter at Channel 4 News here in Salt Lake City, and they sent me out the door to do a story on childhood obesity, and I lined up an interview with a pediatrician. A local pediatrician in the Salt Lake Valley area. And I went to interview him, and he said, "You will never hear me say that fast food," or this was probably before Lunchables were invented, "are horrible for children, because what you have to understand is I see so many children, when we're fully aware of many, many children, that in their homes, that is the only meal that they are going to get all day. And when burritos are 2 for a dollar and tacos are 4 for a dollar and McDonald's is selling hamburgers for a dollar, or there's a Lunchable for $1.25, that's the only meal that child will get all day long. It is about getting food in our kids' stomachs, getting calories into them." So that was my wake-up call, and that was long before I ever became a mom. It changed my point of view on pizza day. Every Friday at school. Research shows that a lot of voters do not put climate change on top of their list. However, President Joe Biden has made climate change and addressing it a key point in his presidency. And it has so scooped up Dave, it has so mesmerized my co-host that he ran out and said, "Biden, this one's for you." And he bought himself a $20,000 electric vehicle that he now tootles around in.
First of all, it's $16,597.
But you
got stop
a
rounding up,
did you get
Deb.
A rebate? Was that with the rebate or after?
No, I'm going to get a rebate on this as well if I ever
do
my taxes.
Thank you, Biden. Dave says thank you.
I think the reason people don't prioritize climate change, or the voters don't really care about climate change, is because there is no tangible reward. I drive an electric vehicle. Like you said, my family powers their homes with solar. I can't point to one tangible difference. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not breathing better air. I'm not feeling less warm. You know, I'm not feeling any difference. So when I don't see any return, any direct return, then I just don't care. And okay. I think there's a lot of voters that are with
me. But you're considered probably a more seasoned voter. Let's put it that way. A veteran voter.
Old voter.
The Wall Street Journal did a poll. 3% of young voters, only 3% of young voters, call climate change their top issue. I would have expected them, because they're going to inherit the earth, to be a little more all in on this. But maybe this is just one of those, to your point, Dave, that people have a hard time wrapping their heads and their arms around and understanding how it's going to impact them. And Adoba, anchor for weekend edition of Morning in America on News Nation. Hey, thanks for calling us, and it's good to talk to you.
Hey, guys. It's so nice to hear your voices. I just want to add to what David said. I'm picking up my brand new Tesla in 2 hours. My house is also powered by solar. And I think you're absolutely right, Dave. I think there's just nothing tangible we see. As for the Tesla, I don't even think it's the most attractive car out there. I like other cars better, but I'm trying to do better, you know, what's better for the planet or what I'm told. Yeah. And I'm not sure how to see it. And I think that's what a lot of voters are seeing. You mentioned that Wall Street Journal poll. This was surprising to me. We've been covering these kind of stories for a very, very long time. I did expect the younger demographic, that's 18 to 25, 18 to 35, to list it as one of their top concerns, maybe even their top three concerns. For them, across the board, and this is 18 to 55, the concern is the economy. It's not the climate.
And that was so shocking to me that this wasn't the top thing, because we talk about it so often. It's in the headlines all the time. But it seems like the economy has just trumped everything for everybody.
And arguably, you know, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, or if you're independent, you can say that President Joe Biden has done so much to at least talk about climate change. You and I were talking about these incentives that we're getting for solar power, whether it comes to our house or our cars. We spoke about the Wall Street Journal. They asked voters in 7 swing states. So that's a lot of people. 2 to 3%. That's it. Depending on age, said climate's important. Harvard actually also interviewed a group of people. I mean, this is obviously 18 to 22. 39% said they trust the president's handling of the climate. So we've been talking on the show a lot whether Biden has had messaging problems when it comes to certain issues. Climate, I think, is going to be one of those things that's so hard to tackle because a lot of people don't seem to care about it, or they just don't know enough about it to make it a focal point when they're voting in November.
Yeah, and I think you hit on something. We don't know enough about it because we're not all scientists. You know, we don't
exactly
understand. I know scientists take this very seriously. I was listening to a New York Times podcast the other day where they're shooting things into the clouds to cool the temperature just a little bit as an experiment. I mean, they're trying to come up with all kinds of ways, because this climate change debate and the issue that's facing us is not working on a lot of people to do something about it. So they're trying to come up with ways to fix it through science. So I know they're all in on it. I think it's just a topic that's really hard to relate to unless you are like borderline genius. That's just my take.
Or maybe even personally affected, because,
yeah,
you know, there's so many parts of the world that are dealing with natural disasters that we haven't seen. And many scientists say it is due to climate change, but also a lot of people don't believe that. So when it comes to this, there's just messaging problems all around.
And when you mention those messaging problems, I think in part what has hurt the Biden administration is a lot of the green initiatives they have pushed forward were wrapped into what they call the Inflation Reduction Act, which nobody's going to attach to green.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's a $1 trillion project with a T that gives credits and grants and loans. A lot of people don't know about it. With that said, the Biden administration also approved a few fossil fuel projects. Not too many, but there's one in West Virginia that a lot of people are upset about. And that's also for those people who do want to protect the climate, who are keeping an eye on it, are not thrilled with his handling with that as well. But a lot of people in the administration say, listen, we need to keep both sides happy. He might need to appease to those people that are behind fossil fuels just to get reelected again.
Anadoba, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to your reports in your anchoring this weekend. You anchor the weekend edition of Morning in America on News Nation. So thank you for joining us.
Straight ahead, Steve and Andy standing by live. Of course, a movie show every Friday from 11 to 1 right here on KSL News Radio. They'll be talking about the big movies of the week, what they love, what they didn't like. And also, here's the question of the week. What movie have you seen more than 10 times? I mean, I don't make the threshold a little higher, guys, because I've seen this movie that I'm going to talk about at least 20 times. I mean, I may have seen it 50 times. Next.
Dave and Dujanovic. The following preview has been rated G and is appropriate for all audiences.
So Andy and Steve getting ready for the movie show. It starts in just a few minutes. They're going to be joined by film director T.C. Christensen, whose new movie, Escape from Germany, just opened last night.
We have been informed by our church president that in 3 days the German army will invade Poland.
There's so many things I love about this. Number one, for the first time maybe in history, Andy and Steve, I saw a movie before you. I've seen this show. I was invited to the premiere. Are you jealous? A little jealous? I don't know where these guys are.
Radio silence.
Are they around?
No, we're here.
Okay, you there guys? You go. You got,
we were just going to say, did the flashbulbs go off when you got out of the limo, Dave?
Let's just say the red carpet did not focus on me. It was mostly on TC.
Well, that's probably all right. But what did you think of it?
I loved it. Oh, it was great. It was so... But I'm also super biased because TC is my buddy. He taught me pickleball, and he will always be my guy.
Oh,
so,
there you go.
Yeah, we're good friends.
So the premise of the movie is it's set in the just before World War II, right?
Yes, in the month before Germany invades Poland.
And the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints able to evacuate? Is it
Well, they sent the order out that they needed to get all the missionaries out of Germany, but, you know, 1939, they didn't have text lines. They couldn't. There were telegrams used, exactly. But the missionaries aren't exactly around a place where they can get a message. They didn't know to be looking for it. So the mission president gets the assignment that we need somebody to go round up the ones who aren't in the main city that we can get a hold of quickly. And so this one elder gets the assignment, and he heads off with nothing but hopefully God to guide him to whoever to get him out.
Hmm.
The brilliance was when they started whistling a church hymn.
Yes. And I thought that was a really
good cool,
and that's a real
idea.
Thing. So the part of the fun is that this is based on real people. Part of the thing that I found interesting is we've had people reach out to KSL. We got an email. I had a friend comment on a Facebook article like, this is my uncle, my dad, my grandfather was one of those missionaries, and they're so excited to have a chance. And TC told me, I did an extended interview with him that's on our movie show, Digital Extra, where he said, you know, there's a lot of relatives of people that that are actually in the movie.
Yeah, the extras. They invited them, and they came to be the extras in the movie. It was, and they were at the premiere. And it was so emotional. It was really neat, again, because this is a true story. This goes back, you know, to World War II, and it was a great movie. I love it.
The only question I have, the one scene where they steal a train, I want to know if that really happened.
That's all I care about. Andy,
well,
Steve,
we're going to ask
it.
TC that when he comes on the show at 11:20.
A little artistic liberty, maybe?
You even
exactly. I thought, wait a minute, this is Indiana Jones. What happened here?
So you even have a time slot for him, 11:20. So if you have to step away, run in, get your hamburger for lunch, and get back to your car by 11:20, you're going to hear from TC Christensen, the director of Escape from Germany. And then your question of the week is one of my favorite questions of the week you two brainiacs have come up with. What's a movie you've seen more than 10 times? I'm not even going to make you guess what mine is. I think I've seen this at least, probably 25 times.
You're going the wrong way!
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
You're going the wrong way!
Oh, he's drunk! How would he know where we're going? How would he know?
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Woo!
Thank you.
On the wrong side of the road.
Debbie, did you watch the Steve Martin documentary that's on Apple TV Plus?
No, because I don't have Apple TV Plus.
I was just telling her about it. Oh,
yeah, he says it's worth
the
watch.
Let's do a telethon. There's like $15 a month. Come on, Dave.
Okay, I'll do it.
Just do it for 1 month.
I'll do it. Yeah, I absolutely love those two. The reason I love that movie so much is because no matter where you're at with your headspace in life, you are bound to laugh your way through that movie. It never disappoints. I can watch it 25 more times and I'd still laugh as hard as I did the first time.
It's so good.
We said bonus points if it's not a franchise movie, but I'm also seeing from our comments on our Facebook page that a lot of people are listing Christmas movies, which makes perfect sense because that's something you watch every single year. So we'll say bonus points if it's not a holiday movie. You can certainly list those. That's totally fine.
Throw them out too. Huh?
Well, right, but I'm curious to see what are the movies that I maybe wouldn't have thought somebody watched 100 times or 20 or 10 times in this case, because for me, you know, I know I've seen Star Wars well over 10 times.
Oh yeah,
all of the Star Wars movies. I know that I've seen I've seen Dumb and Dumber way over 10 times.
Oh, I might have seen that many. Yeah,
that makes me sad.
Well, that's fine, but that's part of the fun. Is I'm curious, what are people's favorite movies? Steve, what about yours?
Well, mine is Castaway with Tom Hanks, because I was stuck in the Sierras once for a whole weekend. I thought I was going to die, and just to see how he was able to survive on that island blows me away.
Well, Steve, now I wish we had time to learn that story. That's fantastic.
We watched Castaway, my wife and I, in the delivery room while we were waiting for her in labor with our oldest son.
So you have
so that's
good,
what I remember about Castaway. And one time was enough for me.
Yeah. You have fond memories of that moment. She probably does not. I'm just saying. Dave, what's yours?
Can I give you guys a deep cut? Because
please,
that's part
of the fun of this.
Here he goes.
This
movie nobody's ever heard of.
The most underrated movie I've ever seen, by far, Warrior.
Oh, is that with Mel Gibson?
No. This is Tom Hardy, Joel Edgerton, Nick Nolte, UFC. Mixed martial arts.
And you've seen it more than 10 times already.
And yeah, I've probably seen it 10 times this year. I have.
Really?
Love this show.
No wonder you never see any other movies, Dave.
Whoa, Steve, did you say you love this movie too?
I love this movie. I cried.
Oh.
All right, I'm putting it on my list.
Absolutely cried my eyes out.
I know you guys also have the big movie of the week coming up. Was Civil War?
Yes.
Okay. All
right. I'm so excited about this, boys. Yeah. So excited.
We'll let you keep everything under wraps until 11 o'clock rolls around. We'll make Dave
listen.
No hint.
No little indication whatsoever. A little wink.
We both see it.
Yes.
Okay. Definitely. Well, in 3 minutes, you're going to spill the tea on Civil War to all of your amazing listeners, your loyal listeners, including your very own Dave Noriega. You guys have a great weekend. Have a great show. We'll all be listening on our drive home and when I'm waiting in line for my Friday hamburger. Thanks so much, Steve and Andy, the movie show guys.
Weekend Update with Dave and Dejanovic.
Dave and I keeping a close eye on several stories over the weekend, but two that stood out to us that developed this week. Dave, you go first. What's your story of the weekend?
I have got to see what the developments look like with the National Hockey League and seeing if the Arizona Coyotes are going to end up coming to Utah. This is such a moment in time here for Utah. If we can attract another professional sports team downtown, this could be a game changer and open up doors. I think this is absolutely crucial financially. It would be an enormous win. It would be a huge win socially and culturally. This might happen in the next week sometime. So that is what I'm watching very, very closely.
You're going to be trolling all the social media posts and all of the stories that are coming out of Arizona on the Coyotes' fate.
And I'm not even a hockey guy.
Welcome to the world of hockey.
I am now.
Yeah, you are and you will be. This is a big economic win for Utah. And, you know, I don't mind beating Phoenix, my hometown, at their own game on this one.
How about you? What are you watching for?
I just want to say the win of the week to me is what went on in Panguitch this weekend when public officials, the sheriff's office, and the community raced to save that dam from collapsing, because with that large crack in the dam that was happening at Panguitch Lake Dam and the potential for flooding at least some homes and streets in Panguitch, they managed to relieve some pressure. So the concrete structure that was leaning on that dam ends up tilting back in the right direction. So good win. Story I'll still be keeping an eye on to make sure that, you know, all's well now. It looks like it's going to end well, but we're going to be keeping an eye on the community of Panguitch as well this weekend.